What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this coop. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
With the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
A freak flag, feel good, fake it till you make it. Football, Ric Flair, woo! Friday edition of the Rodcast. That's right. Get you hyped up, get you ready for the weekend. We got a lot to get into on the show. I'm sure everybody's already excited and titillated because we are in the midst of March Madness. All right, I'll get the scoreboard up here and get you guys some updates on all of the scores taking place in the second bout of first round games in March Madness. I haven't looked at my bracket yet. I don't obsess about the bracket. I gotta enjoy the experience of March Madness. You know what I mean? I'm a sports fan. You know, I'm not really, and not the Longhorns aren't in it, especially not the Longhorns aren't in it. I don't really have any emotional attachment to any team. I got an emotional attachment to my bracket, all right? But I don't want that to ruin my experience. Every fantasy football fan out there knows how fantasy football can ruin a football watching experience. You don't even watch the damn game. You ain't even having fun watching the game as a football fan anymore. You're too damn worried about, oh, man, why didn't he throw that touchdown to my tight end, you know, to my guy, whatever it is. And the bracket, I think, has a similar effect on the sports fan psychologically. I don't want to go there. I love just watching the tournament. And listen, the tournament, some people were complaining, well, it wasn't a great, you know, first day of games. Wasn't great, man. Not a lot of buzzer beaters, not a lot of Cinderella upsets. The first round of the tournament of March Madness, and America can, I think, they really can relate to this analogy. It's a buffet. All right, America is the hungriest, fattest country on the planet. Yeah, we're the fattest country in the history of the world because we eat and we love food. We love it. All right, Austin, most of the culture in Austin is built around food. We love food. All right, we love to gorge ourselves on it. People are foodies. KD will talk about food for 3 straight hours on the show. All right, so, and I feel them. So think of the first round as a buffet. When you get that much food, that much diversity, all right, on a buffet, no matter what it is, usually the quality of it is not always going to be great. Now, the first round of the tournament it's like the buffet. It's like one of those great, those Vegas buffets at a really nice hotel in Vegas. One of those really, really nice buffet. I mean, it's got pretty much everything you want, but not everything's going to be great. I mean, not everything is going to be stellar. I mean, it's a buffet. Yeah, all right. So in terms of having that much basketball to consume, and so much of it high-level basketball, different matchups. You get to, at a buffet, like the first round of the tournament, you get to taste different things you haven't tasted. You haven't seen a lot of these teams play. I mean, just because you don't have the time to do it. But for the teams you haven't been able to watch, you weren't in your region or in the conference of the team that you root for, you get a chance to see all these other teams and see their styles of play and the culture and then the really good players who are on a big stage. And, you know, that I think is a different experience in itself. All right. And I think of it like a buffet. You get to taste a little bit here or there. Now, every so often you go to a buffet and there's one particular item that is just awesome. Like it kills. It's great. And that's when you get a really good game in the first round, or maybe you're getting upset because it's just something that, hey, you didn't know that the mashed potatoes would be that damn good at the buffet, but they are. They're amazing. All right. You had no idea that the, you know, whatever they had, the pork chops at the buffet was going to be that damn good. You had no idea. All right. But they're amazing. It's like, oh, man, this buffet's got everything. But the pork chops especially, those are legit. So there's some things in the first round that are going to be great. Some games are going to be awesome, and some are going to be lackluster. I will say this, though, and we'll start here, and then we'll work our way to talking about the tournament and, You know, we'll get into the very few upsets that there were. Right now, I'm watching the Texas Tech Northern Kentucky game, a 14 versus a 3, and Texas Tech is up 22-15 with about 5:10 left in the first half. Cincinnati, a 7 seed, facing Iowa. And right now, Iowa is up 64-62 with about 3 minutes left in the second half of that game. Iowa versus Cincinnati. So we'll get you. We'll keep you abreast of everything going on with the Texas Tech, Northern Kentucky game, and all the other games. I see that UC Irvine and K-State just started. It's 9-5. K-State, Oklahoma, Mississippi. That game has in the second half, and I think there are 11 minutes left in the second half. Oklahoma up 70-53. So we'll keep you caught up with all the scores, or at least the ones that you know I can see during the show. And I want to get to some of the games yesterday specifically, but there's something that my Black Stradamus prediction about the tournament is already starting to come true. My Black Stradamus prediction was the ratings are going to be up, and obviously revenue is going to be up, but the ratings especially they're going to be up. I don't know how. Like, you know, how much of a boost the ratings are going to get. But, you know, and it's not just a Zion Williamson effect, because Zion didn't play yesterday, and CBS Sports and Turner Sports, they basically said for their 2019 NCAA tournament rankings, for the tournament ratings, excuse me, for the first day of the tournament, that first Thursday, it tied for the second highest rated first Thursday since 1991. And that's for a lot of reasons. There are a lot of reasons for that, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of different reasons. But my prediction was and think about it, that's no Zion Williamson. He didn't play yesterday. And we didn't get a lot of upsets yesterday. There were actually some complaints that it wasn't a lot of madness in the first day of March Madness. We'll get to the few upsets there were, but you didn't really get that. I mean, you had some competitive games, but you didn't get a lot of upsets, big time upsets that we've become accustomed to in the first round. But people still were watching. Second highest ratings for that first Thursday since 1991. It was the best Thursday that they've had in 4 years. I think it averaged a 6.0 rating in meters, and that was for all the different household shares from TBS, TNT, CBS, and True TV. March Madness social media accounts produced a 72% lift in what they call engagement over the first day, over last year. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And we all know, and my man Kevin Dunn will tell you, college basketball was way more popular in the 90s and the early 2000s. Had way more star power. I could be wrong about that. I could be off. But I think it's lost popularity in terms of the regular season and its relevance, but not the tournament. But there's a reason I think the ratings are up. By the way, the conference tournament ratings were up too. And the selection show had its highest ratings in 5 years. And I don't want to attribute all of it to legalized sports betting, but I think a lot of it's due to legalized sports betting. I think a lot of it. The American Gaming Association really excited to release a report that almost $9 billion are expected to be bet on the NCAA tournament this year. 50 million Americans are going to bet on it. And that's not, of course, that's not all legal. But in 8 states, it is. 23 states are considering legal legislation to legalize sports betting. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think, and they stated this too also in the piece, the American Gaming Association says 40%, there's going to be 40% more Americans and 40% more money is going to be bet on the tournament than even on the Super Bowl in terms of a one event. The biggest sports betting event in the country, if you want to say that. And I think that's why the ratings are up because of that. I think people are legalized sports betting. I think people are doing more research, which is what bettors do. And if you're a bettor, you watch intensely. And there have been numerous studies by the American Gaming Association that has stated several times in several different studies that if, you know, legalized sports betting becomes widespread, then the ratings for all sports will go up. And hell, March Madness is a prime example of that, right? March Madness is it's kind of the family friendly way for America to get accustomed to gambling. I mean, that's basically what, you know, the March Madness has been. And I think you can give a lot of different kind of social examples of it, but you know, March Madness is one of those events that, you know, grandmother betting money on it is not considered a big deal. Everybody bets on March Madness, and they don't really consider it betting. They don't consider it gambling, but it is. And 80% of Americans, you know, gamble in some respect, in some form or another, even the lottery or whatever it is. But when people bet money on fantasy football and March Madness, they don't consider it gambling. They don't. They don't put it in that category. It's like some people who say, you know, weed is not drugs. That's not drugs. That's not drugs. Oh, well, it is drugs, but I understand what you're saying. It's not as deadly as heroin or crack, but it's still a drug. And, yeah, it's still gambling. You know what I mean? But it's the PG-13 family-friendly way of it. And it has, and I think in society, you see a lot of examples of this. We've been desensitized to the idea of sports gambling now by March Madness and by fantasy football. And it's much like what the medical marijuana movement did for marijuana, or the CBD movement did for marijuana. It's a bridge to drastic societal shifts that make it more palatable to the masses, a subject that is considered taboo because we don't like change. As just people, we don't like change. So we need something to bridge the gap, you know, to desensitize us to it. And that's what March Madness has done for legalized sports betting. But that's also why the ratings are up, and the ratings will be up. And I said the Zion effect has actually not even taken effect. No pun intended, because it's not right now. It's, you know, he's still, you know, this is his day that he's going to play. Yesterday, people were hyped about the tournament for a lot of different reasons. And of course, straight cash homie is a big part of that. All right. So, you know, we'll come back to that conversation. But that happens a lot, by the way. One of the things that they credit to the different changing attitudes about gay marriage in this country is television. They basically say television is the reason that America is cool with gay marriage, and they weren't before. Because television brought a lot of gay characters into our homes where people didn't know a lot of gay people. It was like, oh, Modern Family gay guy, that guy's cool. Oh, I like Will and Grace, or, you know, the L word, Glee, whatever the hell it is, whatever you watch with a gay character on it. All right, whether it be Ellen from way back
Spartacus.
In the day.
You seen Spartacus?
I have not seen Spartacus.
A ton of gay stuff going on in Spartacus.
Well, see, that was the thing. They used to hide it in Hollywood. But when they started being open about it, coming out of the closet, not the reference, not the subtle references where they're trying to hide it, and it's like a hidden message, like in all the Harry Potter movies. Everything's like hidden. You know, there's a lot of gay stuff going on there, which is cool. Nothing wrong with it. But they try to hide it. And in, you know, when Ellen was big, because Ellen was the first main character that was openly gay, I'm out there, boom, deal with it. All right? I'm queer, I'm here. It's happening. And America got used to that. America was like, oh, man, we love Ellen. And Ellen's gay. We love Ellen and Ellen's gay. We love Will and Grace. Will and Grace are gay. And that, you know, that connection, it desensitizes, you know, and makes something that was taboo a little bit more acceptable and a little more palatable. And then slowly but surely over time, attitudes change. And it's not because everybody has a gay friend, but everybody thinks they do because they watch Modern Family. And they love the characters, so they watch Ellen or whatever it is. So I think in that aspect, along the same lines, I believe that's what March Madness and fantasy football have done for legalized sports gambling. That's what CBD and the medical marijuana movement did for the legalized recreational marijuana movement. All right. Let's talk about the upsets last night. Well, there were a lot of upsets. There was one big upset. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of Cinderella. You guys know that. All right. I think Cinderella is necessary for the entertainment product, but I'm not really a big fan of Cinderella's making a run, although it, you know, it does happen from time to time. I did say my favorite Cinderella story, the one I was going to stick with, one of my Black Stradamus predictions. I was like, man, I'm going with Murray State. Told that, you know, to Wax yesterday, brought it up on the air. I said, that's the one. If I'm picking one. All right, to be a Cinderella story, that's it. And I want a true Cinderella story. I think Murray State would be a true Cinderella story. Showed up in more ways than one. They also have what may be the second best player in the tournament in Ja Morant, who had a triple-double, all right, in their win over Marquette, 83-64. He had 17 points, 16 rebounds, 11 assists. He's the real deal. How about this? Him and Zion Williamson were on the same AAU team. I mean, did that team lose a game? Him and Zion Williamson were on the same AAU team. It's crazy, right? That's unbelievable. So it's weird. I'll say this, too, because obviously Jay Morant was a great player when I picked, you know, Murray State to be a great Cinderella story. And we'll see. I mean, Cinderella's got to win more than one big game and pull more than one upset.
Dude, I had Marquette going deep. I wish you would have talked
really?
To your boy, dude.
I told you yesterday that I love
Murray
State.
I know, but she was already out of Twin Peaks. And I was.
Oh, man. Dude, Murray State was good. That's the only team I did research on. I was like, oh, I like him. I said it yesterday. I was like, I like him. I like they got a star.
He was big on Ja Morant before a lot of people were, too, dude.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's a great player. And I'll say this. He's got a triple-double. Before 1984, they didn't count assists at the college basketball level, and before 1986, they didn't statistically keep up with blocks either. So basically, there were triple doubles in the NCAA tournament before 1986. They just weren't official. It's like when sacks weren't official in the NFL yet, but there are still guys getting sacks, a lot of them. So Larry Bird, I think, has had a triple-double in the tournament. Just not official because it was in, like, 1979. Magic Johnson had a couple in 1979. I think he had a couple, too. Artis Gilmore. Oscar Robertson had four. unofficial. What's his name? I believe B.H. Bourne, Kansas player, 1953. Long, long time ago. I believe he had a triple-double, unofficial one. But the official ones, since they actually, 1986, been able to keep up with blocks and assists. Draymond Green had two, 2011 and 2012. Also, Cole Aldrich had one. D. Wade had one. Andre Miller had another one. David Kane had one. Shaq and Cary Grant. So that makes him the 8th player to get a triple-double since it became official. But there are guys who've gotten triple-doubles before. It's still rare. It shows that you are legit. I mean, look at that list of players. I won't go back and do the research. I bet KD or Craig Way could help me do it better. But, hell, man, just the list of the guys since it's been official, Draymond Green, you know, Shaq, Andre Miller, D. Wade. I mean, those are good players. He's right now projected to be the second pick behind Zion Williamson, too. So that's why I like it. And I said, I want a Meghan Markle Cinderella story. You know I mean, I don't want just, you know, a team that we knew was pretty good.
Talking about the girl from Suits?
No, yeah. The princess now.
Prince Harry,
but she's the Duchess of Sussex.
It's Prince Harry, right? Prince William, no.
Duchess of Sussex or something like that. But my thing is, the reason she's important is because she was not born of nobility or royal blood at all. Usually, you know, they like to hang out in the same circles, those regal royal folks. But she's not from royalty. Like, she's just, you know, an around-the-way girl, you know what I mean? And now she's living the dream that every woman in the world probably dreams of is getting to, you know, be the Duchess of Sussex and live in the castle or whatever. So, I mean, that's what I want. I want that kind of Cinderella story. I think Murray State can be that kind of Cinderella story. You know what the key to Cinderella is? I mean, the story. The key to Cinderella story is the slipper, right? The glass slipper. You put on the glass slipper, she goes from rags to riches. Boom. Glass
doing
slipper.
Something so wrong.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It is. You talk about hidden, you know, kind of hidden messages and symbolism. Yeah, the glass slipper is, come on now. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. And you got to put on the glass slipper. When you do, boom, everything changes for her and she turns into the woman of your dreams. And the glass slipper for the Cinderella stories, though, in March Madness, it's the three-pointer. I mean, it really is Murray State. I mean, you look at what they were able to do, not Jay Morant, of course. He was legit. But Minnesota was another upset. Let's go look at that game. Minnesota beat Louisville, which also hurts my bracket. Haven't looked at it yet, but I remember that one. They beat them 86-76. And Richard Pitino,
he's iron here.
I know, right? Yeah, he said they can't. I know, that is. They wanted that. I mean, that's the way they wanted it. He said they can't. They said, actually, that was random, too. They said they did not actually set that up where Rick Pitino's son will be playing against Louisville, but will be coaching against Louisville. But anyway, I digress. Minnesota hit 11 threes. despite entering the tournament 344th nationally in made threes. They were 344th in the country in made threes. They hit 11 of them, upset. Glass slipper. I mean, that's part of it. If you're going to pull the big upset, and they shot, I think they hit 40% from three-point range, and Louisville was around, I think, 9 of 26, 34% from three-point range. Usually, not all the time, there are exceptions to the rule, usually when you're going to see a big upset in the first round of the tournament, double-digit seed, taking down a single-digit seed, the three-pointer in the most recent era is a big part of the story. Even when, and I picked Yale to beat LSU, and I was wrong about that because LSU ended up winning that game 79-74. Yale was getting beat bad early on. I remember that, watching that Twin Peaks. Yale's able to come back because they basically started sinking three-pointers. They made, I think, they trailed by 16 points at half, but came back courtesy of the three-pointer. They made four three-pointers in the last, like, 3 minutes of the game to bring it close. I mean, they were terrible from three-point range all game long. You could argue they died by the three. They were 8 of 37, I believe, from three-point range. But they late in the game when they were making their surge is because they finally started to connect. They actually started to make some headway. Another upset that I picked that didn't happen, I picked New Mexico State over Auburn. That did not happen. And it almost happened, though. Auburn won 78-77. The reason I picked them, though, because I said if you're going to pick a Cinderella story, if you're going to pick an upset, it's usually the three-point. They got to be good at taking three-point shots, and they got to, you know, they got to be one of the teams that really can get on a hell of a run behind the three-point line. New Mexico State shot the ninth most three-pointers this season. But the only problem is they ran into Auburn, who shot the third most three-pointers this season. They shot over 1,000 three-pointers, and Auburn was more efficient from three-point range. They almost connected on 40% of their three-pointers. And all but six field goals in the last 11 minutes for Auburn with threes. So once they got hotter than New Mexico State got in the end, and boom, that's what happened. And I brought up Murray State. They had Jay Morant, of course. I think that's the biggest reason they were able to pull the upset over Marquette. And I did pick that one right. That was a black shirt almost prediction I actually got right. And they won 83-64, but they hit 50% of their threes. And Marquette hit 25% of them. Florida beat Nevada. That was just kind of a battle of attrition. That was kind of an ugly game, actually, especially from shooting-wise. I mean, I think Florida hit 27% of their threes, and Nevada hit around 20%. That usually, man, the three-point line is it's big. It's significant when you're talking about pulling the upsets. We'll see the second day if that trend holds. But, I mean, that was the case. You know, that was pretty much the case last year, too. I mean, you look at UMBC when they're able to pull the big upset over Virginia. It's a three-point shot. That's the reason they were able to do it. When they took down, let me make sure I get the numbers right. Yeah, they took a ton of three-pointers in that game. They made, and there were a lot of upsets last year. Remember Buffalo pulled an upset last year over Arizona? Marshall pulled an upset over, I think, Wichita State. Buffalo took 33-pointers in that game. They made 15 of them. So they hit half their three-pointers in an upset last year when they took down Arizona in the first round. Arizona was like 2 of 18. And if you look at Marshall, when Marshall beat Wichita State last year, and that was a big upset last year, the head coach for Marshall last year, and I believe he still is, Dan D'Antoni, the brother of Mike D'Antoni. So, I mean, it was all those upsets last year. UMBC took 48 shots, and 24 of them were three-pointers. And they won by 20, by the way. They put an Old Testament-style butt-whipping on Virginia. The reason they were able to do it, they got so hot from three-point range, they were unconscious. They really were. And they hit, you know, most of those three-pointers they took, and that ended up being the game. We'll talk about that, too. But that's the glass slipper, man, if you can get hot from three-point range. We'll talk about the Longhorns, too. They got a basketball game in the NIT second round coming up against Xavier this weekend. My man Wags has got an update for us. Uh-oh, what we got?
From Tulsa, Oklahoma, we got a halftime score. Red Raiders, 30, and we got the Northern Kentucky Norse, 26. So Chris Beard and the boys getting it done just right by a little bit there, but come on. Let's get them up for the Red Raiders.
I need Chris Beard to do well because I got them going to the Final Four. I got Tech going all the way to Final
Four.
Man. Yeah, so I'm rooting for Tech. My bracket makes Longhorn fans feel really bad Because I do believe I got Tennessee
making a run, too. That's the only dude I'm giving some love.
Yeah,
I give Chris. I actually got Rick Barnes' boys. I got them losing. I got them going down.
And oh, really? First round?
No.
I mean, second round.
I got to pull it out. I think they get to the Elite Eight.
Okay. I think I got them going to the Elite Eight, too. I got Tennessee going deep. I got Texas Tech going to the Final Four. I go back and look at my bracket and see the damage that has been done. But, yeah, I think I got both of those teams.
I did pretty good yesterday,
far.
Though. I went 10 for 6. No, not too good, I guess.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
I wish I would have.
As long as you're staying above 500, I think you're pretty good.
13 and 3, 12 and 4, that's a little bit better, though.
I picked a lot of upsets, and I probably should have stayed away from them. We didn't get that many upsets yesterday. We'll see if we get more of those upsets today. All right, we'll come back. We come back, we'll get into some Longhorn basketball discussion. There's an update there. We'll also get into some NFL free agency discussion. All of that and more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horn, 104.9 AM, 1260. Welcome back to the Rodcast. My man Wags is in the he's in the OG kind of frame of mind. He's feeling gangster today. always bringing us in and out of the breaks with jams. My man Wags, not the fake Wags in the Twitterverse. Hit him up. My brother from another mother of another color. I drive the white Bronco for the man. I love him that damn much. All right, you can hit me up via Twitter at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. Real quick, we got Freaky Tales coming up. Freaky Tales is really easy today because next segment, we'll talk about Cam Newton going on the James.
Done this before?
The James Corden show? Is that his name?
I think it's like the karaoke thing.
I don't watch a lot of late night talk shows.
The late show.
It's the late late.
Something like that.
But Cam Newton was on the show with James Corden. I believe it is. That's his name, but I could be wrong about that. And I don't know how they got into the conversation. I really haven't seen the clip. I just seen the quote. And in the quote, he said that he's abstaining from any relations or sexual activity. Actually, you know what?
That wasn't what he said.
You know what? And I don't want to get deep into this because this is part of the freaky tale. So we'll get into his comments about how he's abstaining from sexual activity for the month of March. And people found that very interesting. So we'll talk about that. Because Wags, I think Wags has got a little history with this, just abstaining. Are you got any?
Have you ever abstained before intentionally? I have had to abstain, but not by choice.
Okay, so exactly. By choice, like deciding, no, I'm actually going to be chaste. Is that the word for a while? And I have not done it really voluntarily.
Seems like a tough feat.
But I will say this, as a... You know what? I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it for next segment. It's a really deep conversation. I think men can get into a really deep conversation about this, seeing how men think about sex, I don't know, 90% of the day in some way, form, or fashion. So we'll talk about that on the other side. That'll be our freaky tale conversation for the evening. I'm looking at the remaining schedule for the Spurs, and I'm realizing with the, I think it's maybe they have 10 games left, I believe it is. They only play three teams with even winning records.
They're going to do this again.
No,
they are going to get to the postseason again.
Oh no, not just the postseason. They may get really favorable seating. Yeah, because think about this. We talked about this yesterday, but it got even more convoluted overnight. There are now basically seeds. If you look at the NBA right now and the standings of the Western Conference. Seeds five through eight all have the same record. They all are 42-30. And that is Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Utah, and the Clippers. It's crazy. And
it's very fun to watch, man.
It really is. It's going to be
what a great time, dude. You got March Madness, you got NBA.
I mean, it's great basketball
NHL.
Time. This is almost when we as a nation become, we're awakened to our basketball sports fandom. We are. March Madness kind of kicks it off. It's a great point because now everybody's kind of in a basketball mood. But, man, I know, and we don't even have LeBron in these playoffs. But, man, the Western Conference 5-8, considering, okay, so the Spurs could end up finishing as high as, I would say right now, depending on how everything shakes out, they definitely could get as high as 4. And maybe that's it. Maybe the highest they can get is 4. It's kind of where I'm looking at it, realistically, unless something catastrophic happens. But by the way, Oklahoma City lost 4 straight and went from, you know, I think they were the fourth seed, and now they're in the muck with everybody else. So San Antonio has got 10 games left, only three of them against teams with winning records. Big game tonight against Houston, at Houston, in H-Town. It's big for Houston, and it's big for San Antonio. Because Houston would ideally love if they could somehow creep their way up to that second seed in the West. The remaining schedule for Denver, who's the number two seed right now, and by the way, only a game separate Denver from Golden State. Hell, if Denver goes on a run here and Golden State drops a couple, Golden State could end up at the two seed, which I don't know if it's going to happen. Denver's remaining schedule, they got 12 games left, seven of them on the road. They're 18 and 16 on the road. All right, seven of those on the road. They got to play nine teams who are currently considered playoff teams, who are currently in the top eight of their conference. So their road games against Utah, Portland. They got to play Golden State on the road. They got to play Oklahoma City on the road. They got to play Houston on the road. And they got to play Indiana on the road. Those are all playoff teams. Those are good teams. And they got to play them on the road. And if they slip up, they lose two of those games, and Houston starts to close the gap. Houston still has a shot. I think Houston's like four out of that, maybe that second seed. But that the schedule for Denver down the stretch is brutal. Brutal. For a team that we know that they're a team with no stars. We know they don't really have any star power. They're just doing it off of, you know,
Murray and Jokic pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Like they don't have
a good dominant too. That's a good pair.
But... No, and they're a good team. I'm not saying they're a bad team, but they're a good regular season team. They're like what the Atlanta Hawks used to be a few years ago, like the Raptors were like, you know, 2 years ago. You know, and the Raptors, we'll see. This year they may be a different team because they got Kawhi Leonard. They got the star power. But Houston, who's been 12-2 in their last 14 games, they got San Antonio tonight. It's big. They got to win this game against San Antonio. If they don't win this game against San Antonio, then they're definitely going to be the three seed. Hell, depending on how the West shakes out, they could even drop down even further. If they do that, they got no shot at beating Golden State. No shot. The only way they can beat Golden State, in my opinion, they got to get – try to get to that two seed. I think it's going to be tough even at the three to try to get all that way without – playing, you know, because Oklahoma, you don't want to meet Oklahoma City and you don't want to meet San Antonio early on. I think those are the teams, if you're Houston, that can wear you down. San Antonio's got a really good game plan versus Houston because they play them often and it's Popovich, and we've seen Popovich pull out masterful game plans versus Harden before without star power and beat the Rockets. And even if the Rockets do beat the Spurs are a really good defensive team. You know they're hard-nosed, so they'll wear you down, and they'll provide a blueprint to Steve Kerr, who is a disciple of Popovich, as to how to beat the Rockets. You don't want to play the Spurs early on. You want to try to avoid it. I don't know if you can, but I think moving up in the standings is the best way to try to do it. And you also, I think, want to avoid OKC. Nobody wants to play OKC early. I know OKC's inconsistent. Yeah, they are, but they still got Russell Westbrook and Paul George. You don't want to play them early. Nobody does. Because I think they'll wear down an opponent in the first round. Even if you beat them, even if it's Golden State, they'll wear you down for the next opponent.
And Steven Adams is one of my favorite big guys to watch, too. He don't really do much on the stat line, but he just does so much
enforcer,
off the stat line, too, dude.
Junkyard dog.
In terms of space and finding spacing as a big man and making passes, high-low passes as well. OKC is a fun team to watch, dude.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So I people aren't paying attention to the, you know, the NBA standings, and they shouldn't really be paying attention because it's March Madness. But, man, it is crazy. Last 10 to 12 games of the season are going to be wild, and they're going to be actually relevant. They're going to matter. Like, teams are not going to be able to rest guys down. If you go to state, you can't rest anybody down the stretch. You're a game ahead of Denver for the one seed. They got to go full throttle down the stretch. They have to. And jumping over to the Eastern Conference, man, the East can be won by four.
All screwed, man.
Four different teams can win the East,
and
right?
You got Boston that's down there at the five, right? But they've had, you know, Philadelphia's number all damn year. Philadelphia's only beaten Boston one time this whole regular season, and Philadelphia is what, the three? It's crazy.
Philly's the three, Milwaukee's the one, Toronto two, Philly the three. Six games basically separating
Pacers
those three teams.
Pacers are what, the four right
Pacers
now?
Are the
Boston's
four right now.
Five.
Boston's five, yeah. And Detroit six, Brooklyn seven, and Miami eight. But you're right, that top five.
It's a fun shuffle, man.
That top five is a fun. It is. It's crazy to think about an exciting NBA season without LeBron James, but it's turned out to be more competitive than we thought. I think it's key. I would love for Oklahoma City to play the Warriors early. I said it yesterday. You go look at every time and it ain't a lot of examples of this, but every time we've seen a team that is more talented, the team that is the perennial favorite, go down, whether it be Shaq and Kobe, the Lakers going down to the Detroit Pistons in the finals, or whether it be LeBron James taking out Golden State in the finals, during their playoff stretch, they always played somebody that wore them down. The Spurs did it to the Lakers in, 04 when Detroit beat them in the finals. The Spurs took them to 6 games. You know, playing the Spurs back then in 04 with a young Duncan? Hell, that ain't easy, man. That'll wear you down. It wore down the Lakers, and they got beat in 4-1 to Detroit. They weren't even competitive. Detroit put a weapon on them, and we know the Lakers were better. And the same thing happened with Golden State. Golden State, remember, I pushed the 7 games with Oklahoma City that year that LeBron beat them. Oklahoma City was supposed to beat them.
Was pretty balling there. They had Big Ben Wallace.
They had Big Ben.
Wallace.
They had Rip Hamilton.
Yeah, but they only had Tayshaun Prince. They didn't have Kobe.
Come on,
yeah,
man.
Right,
they weren't supposed to beat the Lakers. At least not beat them 4-1.
Yeah,
4-1. Lakers won one game.
Man. That's an ass whooping.
They put a whipping on them. And the same thing, I think that's why LeBron was able to beat Golden State, because Oklahoma City helped him out when they pushed Golden State to 7 earlier that playoffs. I think that's the key. Even LeBron was worn out when Dallas beat Miami. When Dallas beat Miami the first year he went to Miami, think about it, LeBron James. It was a decision. He had a lot of expectations on him first time, moving to a new town with he had the pep rally, not one, not two, not three, all that crap. All right, he became a villain for the first time in his career. Everybody hated him. I think all of that psychologically wore him down, and I think that's why even though they're a more talented team versus Dallas, the one-man show with Dirk, and I know they had some great pieces, they were able to pull that upset. It doesn't happen often in the NBA, but I think this year it's possible. It's possible. Is it, I don't know if it's very probable, but it can happen. All right, so we'll come back. Freaky Tales, when we come back, we'll talk about Cam Newton's abstinence campaign for the month of March, and we'll discuss if we've ever abstained ourselves. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast on a Freak Flag Friday edition of the Rodcast right here on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
These are the tales, the freaky tales. These are the tales that I tell so well. These are the tales, the freaky tales. These are the tales that I tell so well.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Freak Flag Friday edition of the Rodcast. So let's get some freaky tales in here. This one comes from Cam Newton. He was on the James Corden show, the Late Late Show with James Corden. And he basically revealed that he was in a he was basically having a vow of chastity for the month of March.
So this is for Lent, though, right?
I'm assuming it is. They did not specify that. I'm assuming that's what it is.
Like 40 days and 40 nights movie.
Yeah. He said, quote, "In March, I hope this is an adult crowd. It looks like it is." He said, "No climax." He said, "I wanted it to be challenging." He said, "I'm coming off shoulder surgery." He wanted to, I guess, abstain for the reason. He said, "It makes my mind stronger to abstain from relations." He said, "So when the season comes around, I say if I did those things, I'm mentally stronger."
Definitely makes you meaner.
So celibacy, he believes, makes it. Well, remember on the Rocky movies, Mick used to always tell him, like, "Women weaken legs, Rock. All right,
they weaken your knees.
I've got to have right. Women weaken legs." So maybe there's some. I know there are some a lot of boxers abstain, though. They still do to this day.
My father was so big on this.
I believe Manny
Pacquiao.
If
you're gonna fool around on Friday, after the game, you fool around on Friday and Saturday, but you need to be mean all week long for practice.
Manny Pacquiao, I believe, was one of the last boxers that I remember that openly abstained, like, the 2 weeks before the fight, whatever it is. So maybe but it's in March, so I don't know. Listen, I believe this was one of the keys to Tim Tebow's strength. Which he may lose here soon.
You got to figure off season you're lifting weights.
Tim Tebow, man, he's got a lot of little pent up, and he uses that energy somewhere. I don't know where it goes, but
nobody gets the ball right here but me.
He knows how to translate it. All right, even for the Lord too. I'll say this. I do, and I remember Seinfeld has a really cool episode about this. George Costanza, basically, his girlfriend gets like mono or something, and she tells him she can't have sex, so he ends up going, celibate and involuntarily because of his girlfriend. And as a result of it, he becomes smarter, because the theory is that men think about sex like 80% of the day.
And Elaine actually gets dumber,
75%
right?
of the time, yeah. And because he's abstaining from sex, he actually has more time to intellectually stimulate himself, and then he becomes smarter. And if men could focus the sexual energy on other aspects of life, then they could be transcendent human beings. But because we're obsessed with sex, we have a ceiling. And that's what Tim Tebow, I think that's the Tim Tebow theory, is that he's been able to focus that energy. That's a powerful energy. And now and Cam Newton's trying to tame it, if you will. So there you go. I mean, my man Wags. Wags hooked it up. Here's a little taste of the Seinfeld theory about celibacy in men.
Just lately, I've been thinking a lot clearer. Like this afternoon with his chicken Kiev, I really enjoyed watching a documentary with Louise.
Louise, that's what's doing it. You're no longer preoccupied with sex, so your mind is able to focus.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, let's say this is your brain, okay? Now, from what I know about you, your brain consists of two parts. The intellect, represented here. And the part obsessed with sex. Now, granted, you have extracted an astonishing amount from this little scrap. But with no sex Louise, this previously useless lump is now functioning for the first time in its existence.
Oh, my God. I just remembered where I left my retainer in second grade.
I mean, I kind of agree with that theory. So why doesn't he do it during the season, though, when he could use the power of, you know.
I'm thinking off-season workouts.
Maybe that's it. That's a good point.
That's what I'm
thinking. Okay, there you go. Okay, so Wags, how long have you abstained, either voluntarily or involuntarily?
I think there was like some PEDs or some drugs going on in our eggs in boot camp, but I was actually, what's that, 13 weeks? 13 weeks.
Pretty good.
No release.
Yes,
no
13
charge.
Weeks. There you go.
Let me tell you something. That wasn't just me. It was pretty much our whole squad, our whole platoon, and we were some angry mofos.
Yeah, I mean, think about it's interesting you bring that up. What Cam says is, he says, no climax, which means, honestly, he could still technically engage in relations. He's just not, going to do. And that is true abstaining, because you cannot have sex but still, do other things. He's not doing any of that. Like, he's done. He's like, I'm taking that part of my life. I'm taking a vacation from it for a month. I don't know. That's
what about you, Hal? What's your streak?
I'm definitely going a month. A month is nothing. Let's be honest. A month is nothing. It really is. A month is not that tough. I'm going a month.
I'm
not a sexual camel or anything,
happen.
But I can go a month. We're at no discussion. Now that you have said that, now we're in discussion. That's it. End of it. Wags just said discharge. We are done.
Sorry.
It is over. No, we are not having a discharge conversation on the broadcast on a Friday. Nope, that gotta happen.
It's a little freaky.
Way freaky. Way too freaky. We got too freaky in that one. I apologize. I will come back and we'll get into some of the other big stories of the day. We'll talk about March Madness. Also, the AAF bringing along some great suggestions for the NFL, who are thinking about changing some of their rules. We'll get into all that and more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horn 104.9 AM 1260.